Most of us loved going to the movies and watching a good story unfold on the screen. And while the visceral experience will be something unique to each of us, traditionally it's always been a 2D experience. Now, with the development and application of augmented and virtual reality in filmmaking, instead of just getting to explore time, we can now explore time and space. In the studio now, I am joined by Scott O'Brien, the CEO and founder of Humense. Scott has pioneered the commercialization of AR and VR with over 20 world-first projects. This morning, we'll be chatting about how AR and VR are changing not only the user's experience, but also the way that stories are written. And I welcome Scott now. Scott, good morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Firstly, can you give us a quick rundown of the differences between augmented and virtual reality?
In sort of basic terms, augmented reality is when you're inviting 3D assets or even 2D assets into your world. And virtual reality is when you're sort of taking a point of view inside another world. And that might be a hyper-real world or it might be CGI.
And what part of the brain is activated in those processes?
Well, you know, usually augmented and virtual reality are visual, but in fact, the first augmented reality device is the telephone. That's augmented reality. The person wasn't actually there speaking to you. So we've actually been using augmented reality / audio for years. Predominantly now we're talking about the visual stuff. And the beautiful thing with that is it's one of the main stimuli of the reptile brain, the fight or flight, and which dictates our behaviors and responses, in the 2 milliseconds it takes to go through the eyeball to the visual cortex. Mm. So it's really interesting that way because audio takes 40 times longer to catch up, but I don't mean to, you know, be a radio station
we love audio here, but you know.
Here's the essence of it as well, though. Whatever's delivered in the visual is sort of amplified and multiplied by supporting audio. So audio is super critical to the VR and AR experiences. Absolutely.
Mm. And in respect to filmmaking, how is that evolving with the continuing advancements in AR and VR?
The tools are becoming more democratized. And so before it was sort of more about the software and hardware tinkerers making stuff up and occasional intersections with real artists. But now because the tools are being democratized, more artists are getting their hands on things, which means there's more compelling story. And I steer away from storytelling and sort of training people to start thinking about passing through their lips, story living, embodied stories.
How can it be different with using AR and VR compared to just normal filmmaking?
Well, neuropsychologically, I can explain the number one difference. So if you imagine a horizontal line going from your eyeball to back between your ears, this is the ventral visual processing pathway. And it's activated a lot, it's principally about object identification, but it's activated a lot through 2D interfaces, videos or books or what have you. And it's asking the question, what? But the reason we like to see people in the real world face-to-face is because we're getting spatial data and it's exciting and activating this sort of dorsal visual processing pathway. It's dorsal like the dolphin fin going over the top of our head. And that's the pathway, the visual pathway, that excites the question how and why. So it accelerates relationships, not only in the real world, but through AR and VR. And it also accelerates learning. So this is the unfair advantage that augmented and virtual reality have.
Mm. And do you think the VR projects would tend to be shorter in length, given it's much more of an intense experience than just a 2D film?
There are a number of debates around the length of experiences. And, it's funny in early stage grant provisions from screen bodies. They talk about a 2-minute VR experience or 5 minutes and so on, and no one's doing 90 minutes. Well, the fact is, actually, if you've designed right, you can do a 90-minute to a 5-hour experience.
Do you think people would be able to handle that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, early 1990s VR headsets were heavy and there was, you know, a lack of sort of understanding of ergonomics. But this has evolved now and so ergonomics has sort of been addressed. The heat. So, you know, once upon a time, it was just too much heat going on around the head with the electronics there. So that's sort of been addressed. Dissipation of energy through the device and or having the head mounted display weighted to the back of the head. But also what's been happening in the last 3 to 5 years, thanks to Evan Spiegel's Snapchat and Zuckerberg, the master copier at Facebook, Instagram, is that 99% of, say, people between 20 and 35 have been using augmented reality without knowing it's augmented reality. And you see these photos of people with rabbit ears and dog tongues and cute little panda eyes or whatever.
Mm. No, my producer Shumi was talking about when the car first came out, people were sort of saying that it would be such an overwhelming experience watching life whiz past like that. And apparently some people are saying that about, you know, these VR experiences, that it can be overwhelming and a shock to the senses. Do you think that comes into it?
It absolutely does. So, but also it shouldn't and doesn't need to. So I'll explain that. And here's where Facebook really tripped up with the early Oculus demonstrations, where they put people in a roller coaster experience. So neuropsychologically, what's happening, the eyes are seeing you do all loop the loops and your middle ear is saying, no, I'm perfectly still. And so this creates a divorce in the brain. And when there's a divorce in the brain, some people will vomit. And we need people to have a design understanding that simply you've got to match things up. And there are sort of limitations in what stories could be told. And if you really want to do a roller coaster experience, put someone on a hydraulic sort of moving contraption that can convince the middle ear to go along with the eyes. And you don't have to do it fully. And the classic example of that is the Harry Potter rides in Universal Studios, where they match just enough hydraulic robotic arm movement in the roller coaster ride and then like really emphasize it in the visuals. So where you actually may be moving equivalent of one or two floors through the visuals supporting it, you feel like you've been thrust in the air 200-300 meters.
Wow. And in terms of accessibility at this stage, how can people get into an AR or VR experience? Do they buy their own headset or do they have to go and seek that out elsewhere?
I totally recommend going the deep dive and just buying a kit now. And we're starting to see standalone headsets without needing big PCs and whatever for, you know, $400 to $800. So quite accessible and tons of great games. But also, if you want to play it a bit more safely, you can go to various arcades, and there are maps all around the world where there are arcades, including many in Australia, and one even, in fact, around the corner from 2SER, a place called VR Corner, which, you know, has a half a dozen sort of VR stations with high-end headsets, and there you've got a nice menu of games and experiences you can try. But what's clever about what they're doing there as well as they're getting together with companies like ours and enabling us to expose some of our early developments so we can get user feedback. And so there's a, you know, some great initiative there. But I'd have to say that China, America, and even Malaysia are way more aggressive in their arcade investments.
Well, maybe I'll have to head down there after the show. Scott, thank you so much for joining us on the program this morning.
You're welcome.